Oh, hey there, everybody. It's Scott. Welcome back to another episode of the Viral Shenanigans podcast. Another fun one in store for you today. But real quick, let's talk about some of the sponsors that we have on this program. Now, Susan Robb is a woman out of Toronto, Canada. She's one of our sponsors, along with Kim Ward and Paul Templer, the hippo attack survivor. They are running something called the Nepal Outreach Program and really need your donations. Their goal is to reach $25,000 through individual and corporate sponsorship, and they already have over $5,000 raised. The goal is to put 15 kids into school and supply 17 ladies and moms with sewing supplies to start a business to make these quilts and sell them all over the world. They've already made 10 and shipped them in over 5 different countries around the world, so they are well on their way. Kim Ward, the executive director of the Templer Foundation, a non-for-profit 501c3 mission, is they're trying to secure a house where they can house these women and their children and get them in school for the year. So the first $3,500 raised is going towards tuition and helping them sustain this sewing program. It's just a really good program. Kim and Susan are tirelessly appealing to their network and beyond for donations of any size to keep this worthwhile initiative alive. Make a donation at the GoFundMe Nepal Outreach Program or donate through Twitter at Kim Marie Ward or at M Susan Robb, ROBB3. So that is Susan. She helps us a lot on the show, get some interesting guests, so help her out. Now, we are lucky enough to have two breweries that sponsor this podcast, and they've been with us for quite a long time, and they are awesome. One of them happens to be Demented Brewing, located in Middlesex, New Jersey. So right off of 287 there, go stop in. It's one of the coolest tap rooms around, 16 rotating tap handles, murals on the wall, just a good spot to go chill. Go this weekend, watch the game. So they just released Requiem, their dry hopped lager on draft in the tasting room, and this Sunday they're going to be releasing Sloth, their milk stout on draft in the tasting room. So they do barrel programs, sour programs, you know, they can things basically weekly. So they are just a really awesome brewery, Demented Brewing. Now, Joe Fisher and Manskirt Brewing is the other sponsor on this podcast. They happen to be in Hackettstown, New Jersey, right in the old bank building. There's a real spacious brewery, 8 rotating seasonally inspired ales. So go check out Joe and his Manskirt. They got Burns night coming up on February 3rd at 5:30. There's a Facebook event, haggis, bagpipes, music, poetry, and kilts. Kilts are strongly encouraged. In fact, if you're going to go to a kilt party at Manskirt and you don't have a kilt, they shouldn't let you in. But anyway, that is Manskirt Brewing. Go give them some love on Facebook and Instagram. Finally, Trivia Revolution, fueled by craft beer, at different breweries and brew pubs all throughout New Jersey and beer bars. We play trivia each week. I host at Tap House 15 weekly. So you could be in last place, win prizes to these places. It's just a good night out. There's a bonus item each week that you got to look up on Facebook and Instagram. So go check out Trivia Revolution. Now, today on the podcast, we are joined by, you may remember, Beekman's World. It was kind of like a science show back in the early 90s. You might remember Beekman. So we have Paul Zaloom coming on the show. And we have a man by the name of Matt Weingarten. He is the culinary director for a very famous, popular restaurant that's popping up called The Dig Inn. And they are all over Boston and New York. So Paul Zaloom is very cool. So is Matt. So with that, guys, enjoy the podcast.
Hello, this is Paul Zaloom, a.k.a. Beekman from Beekman's World, and you're listening to Verbal Shenanigans. Oh, yeah.
But our shenanigans are cheeky and fun.
Yeah, I mean, your shenanigans are cool and tragic.
Which makes them not shenanigans at all, really.
Evil shenanigans.
I swear to God, I'll pistol whip the next guy that says shenanigans.
Can't be a podcast if you're not starting it with A.
Hey, Mike.
What's up there, Scotty?
How are you?
Oh, I'm just peachy dandy like summer candy.
Did you just make that up, or is that?
No, that was a quote from Ned Flanders.
Oh, all right. Well, that's acceptable.
Simpsons did it.
Well, Mike, do you have all your Martin Luther King Day special stuff that I told you to come up with?
I actually came here with something for Martin Luther
really?
King Day. Yeah.
Well, then let's jump right in. Let's jump headfirst right into it.
Okay.
Welcome to the Verbal Shenanigans Show. This is probably past Martin Luther King Day by the time this comes out.
I should hope so, considering we're recording it on Martin Luther King Day.
Hey, well, I could put it out right after this.
I dare you to. Right now.
You won't do it.
You won't. I double dog dare you.
All right, hit me with some Luther King.
All right, well, it's... I got a little game for you.
Okay.
And, I mean, he's one of the most influential and loved activists of all time and said some of the most famous quotes in history.
Right.
So I have a game here for you to decide, did Martin Luther King say it or did Donald J. Trump say it?
All right.
All right. You ready for this?
I don't know, but yes.
All right. All right, when somebody challenges you, fight back, be brutal, be tough.
Challenges you, be brutal, be I'm going to go with the doctor on this one.
Trump.
Oh,
for one, Scotty.
I was thinking Trump because he said brutal. That seems like a word that he would throw around.
Basically, if I say a word with more than four syllables, it wasn't Trump. I have embraced crying mothers who have lost their children because our politicians put their personal agendas before the national good. I have no patience for injustice. No tolerance for government incompetence. No sympathy for leaders who fail their citizens.
That's Trump.
That is Trump.
All right.
Correct.
All right.
Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere.
I'm going to go with Dr. Martin Luther King.
You are correct,
sir. Right. That sounds very Martin Luther-y.
Okay. What do you think about this one? Never forget that...
Did you ever see there's a product someone put out, a Martin Luther King, and it's a loofah sponge?
No, but I was digging how people were putting up some people, like, promoting, like, weekend specials at bars. It's like they put a crown on Martin Luther King with, like, a chain and, like, a stripper in the background. And
All right, well, no one's off. No one's out of bounds, I guess.
All right. Never forget that everything Hitler did in Germany was legal.
I gotta say that's Trump, but maybe that's...
MLK.
Yep. You know, I wasn't done thinking.
Well.
All right, well, MLK.
Is that your final answer? The tensions are not between the races, but between the forces of justice and injustice.
I'm going with Trump.
Martin Luther King.
Jace. Not doing good at this one.
Two out of the five.
I feel like the last game I did pretty good.
Yeah.
Whatever that was.
Nothing in the world is more dangerous than sincere ignorance and conscious stupidity.
God, I mean, it sounds like Donald, but could that be part of a Martin Luther King speech? It could, but let's go with Donald Trump.
MLK?
I think I'm like one for six.
Two for four, or two for six, yeah. All right. We trust our minds openly, debate our disagreements honestly, but always pursue solidarity.
That sounds educated. It's got to be Martin Luther King.
Donald Trump.
Oh, Jesus.
Two out of seven. Can't tell the difference.
I mean, they have very similar values, and
yeah,
you know, we'll be celebrating Trump long after.
Yeah,
just like
Martin Luther Trump Day.
Yeah.
When you are right, you cannot be too radical. When you are wrong, you cannot be too conservative.
Trump.
Martin Luther King. Wow.
Striking out left and right.
Two and six.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Seeing is not always believing.
Martin Luther King.
You are correct.
All right.
On the board.
Woo!
Good for you. For those who have chosen not to support me in the past, of which there were a few people, I'm reaching out to you for your guidance and your help so that we can work together and unify.
That sounds spoken like Donald Trump. I'm going with Donald Trump.
That is Donald Trump.
All right. All right. All right.
You're catching up.
I'm
back. I'm
heating up. Mid-season slump. Here we go.
You have to think anyway, so why not think big?
I could see that coming out of Trump, but I'm going to go Martin Luther King.
You should have went with your first one. 4-7. One of the greatest casualties of war in Vietnam is the Great Society, shot down on the battlefield of Vietnam.
Donald Trump.
Martin Luther King. 4-8. Wow.
Mm. How many more we got of these?
I got three more. I had to make it on.
So I can't even go 500.
You
all
can
right.
get close to 500.
All right.
All right. It's always good to be underestimated.
Martin Luther King.
Trump. Scott, you got your leaders mixed up here.
You know, I value them the same.
Yeah, exactly.
Donald Trump and Martin Luther King pretty much equal, if you ask me.
I mean, if you put them up against the wall, I couldn't tell. Which one are you again? The most basic duty of government is to defend the lives of its own citizens. Any government that fails to do so is a government unworthy to lead.
Donald Trump.
You are correct.
All right, all right.
All right, last one. You ready?
I'm ready. I'm not overthinking because every time I've switched, I got it wrong. So here we go.
No dream is too big. No challenge is too great. Nothing we want for our future is beyond our reach.
Donald Trump.
You.
All right, all right, all right, all right, all right. The second half, I picked it up a little bit.
I think you were 6-9, so 33%. Good for
in
you,
in baseball,
Scott.
That's a good average. Yeah. In baseball,
Wally Backman.
I'm an MVP at that in baseball. Speaking of Trump, there, I came across this thing that I had to share today.
Okay.
I thought it was from recently, but it's from a Donald Trump rally, I guess maybe before the election. But
I've seen that. Yeah, I saw that as he was campaigning.
Did you see the girl singing?
Yeah, I've seen that.
Oh, God, we got to play some of this. I have not seen this one, but okay, let's see. So there's all these girls dressed in, like, overtly American outfits, like, doing horrific...
They look like kids who are about to do a play in Arkansas.
Yes.
That's the best
way to start. Reminds me of that Always Sunny episode where the little kid's pageant, and it's, like, real, like, cheesy. Mm-hmm. But those
moms
are
stupid.
Yeah. But those of you who haven't seen this, you need to hear this. So it's live from Donald Trump rally. So we'll play some of this song, and just remember, this is 2016, so this is not a long time ago.
Oh, got a remix going.
On this three.
Are you serious? Apologies for freedom. I can't handle this. But freedom brings end to the call. On your feet, stand up tall. Freedom's on our shoulders. USA. Enemies.
Oh. Now, now let me set the scene here.
Mm-hmm.
It's three girls in front of a Trump. This is in Pensacola, Florida. Shocking. And there's maybe about 100 people behind the stage.
Yeah.
Would you like to guess the ratio of white people to maybe any minority that I see?
I'm going to say 2 to 98.
Yeah, I see two. Okay. I see one black woman, and one maybe Spanish woman. The rest are exactly what you would expect.
Hmm.
A couple red Trump hats, Trump signs, old white ladies. So listen to the lyric. Listen to how this plays on, like, conservative, like, America, woo, yeah, freedom. Like, this is like something, if it wasn't a South Park episode, it would fit right in just like this. So let's listen to the rest.
Can we pause it for 1 sec?
Mm-hmm.
All right, when you're making the lyrics, all right, you gotta have a certain beat. You just emphasize America and just snuck in great. No.
Donald Trump!
He is great!
Here,
looking and stuff and... Blah, blah.
All right, go back a couple seconds so you can hear that great part again.
Kids forgetting the lyrics.
They're clapping to the crowd and stuff. Getting them now.
Skull.
Now the
skull. Skull.
We gotta stand up tall. And I could see Trump himself, like, maniacally writing this on paper. Like, this is gold, like, writing them a song.
4 a.m. and this is great.
Like, handing it to his people, like, make this happen at the next week.
I don't sure what we can do. Just use over there and just use the lyrics.
I don't know how I missed this, but this is, like, phenomenal.
I like how they rhymed USA with USA.
This is like what these three kids would write at like a local school talent show.
And they would still lose to the kid who knows magic.
This is written by third graders. And there's all these like old men in the back. I'm like, oh, yeah, standing up. Freedom. Freedom.
I want this guy to rule the world.
It's as bad as that song, I'm proud to be an American. That song is horrific.
At least I know I'm free. And I won't forget.
Our colors don't run. No siree.
Nope.
Now they're like lifting each other. Oh, they're doing like a roll, like the Cam Newton move. Over here, over there. Freedom and liberty everywhere. Oh, say, can you see? It's not so easy. But we have to stand up tall and answer freedom's call. Coming to the end.
Does he walk off onto stage afterwards?
Oh.
Mm.
I sometimes over there. It just feels like we're living in a book, like a comic book.
Yeah,
like there's no way this is real. And then every time I look at something, there's something new. Well, that's like no way. Did he really say that? Yes, he did. Did he really do that? Yes, he did.
It just boggles my mind. Like every time I come to your house for the podcast, I pass one of those electronic billboards, and every time it switches around every once in a while to say Trump Heart America, and I'm looking at it, I'm like, no, this is real.
Yeah, I know. But in better news and kind of relating to politics,
Oprah's like, running?
Nope.
Oh.
You know what today is, Mike?
Martin Luther King Day.
It is also.
Sing the song?
Chris Christie's last day in office, baby. Mm.
Is that why the traffic was so bad tonight?
He is scheduled to ship back to the Arctic Ocean, and it's over. It is over.
It'd be great if Murray goes down to the summer house and he's just sitting there on the beach. Oh, I didn't think you would come.
You know you're a wacko when Donald Trump's like, I don't really want him in my party. Like, he is another Trump. He's a loudmouth, ignorant idiot, and he would have fit perfectly in that party.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of people were shocked he didn't come over. I know there was, like, a story how he asked Chrissy to come to the White House, and Chrissy had a story where it's like he basically forced me to eat meatloaf. Like, they were in the meeting.
First off, no one ever forced Chris Christie to eat anything.
Well, that was the true story. Like, he talked about it. He's like, you know, we met up for lunch. We were in the Oval Office cafeteria, and he kept on talking about, you got to try the meatloaf. You got to try the meatloaf. And he wouldn't stop, so he had to eat meatloaf for lunch to appease Trump.
It sounds so accurate because those two are maniacs.
Mm-hmm.
My favorite is him on these new heroin epidemic commercials talking about addiction. I'm like, come on, dude. Look at you. You should not be telling anybody the power of addiction.
Meanwhile, our next governor is apparently going to try to push forward with legalized marijuana.
Oh, yeah. Which is, I'm all for.
Absolutely.
I mean, Colorado's got excess money. Like, they literally put like $200 million back into schools last year from pot tax.
That's what I say. I mean, even if you're not a smoker, celebrate this. Put money back. Maybe we'll actually have low taxes in New Jersey for once. Maybe you can actually like afford something.
You know, all that money is just going into someone else's pocket.
I know.
It's Jersey here. But I thought we'd revisit some of Chris Christie's best moments.
Oh,
You know, he was
Sandy. Okay, that was fun.
He was such a good governor. So renowned by the people, so loved. So let's talk. So Florida in the snow shortly after becoming governor. Chris Christie got a lot of heat after spending time in the sun while New Jerseyans were digging out a plenty substantial blizzard. The Christie stayed at the Disney Resort in Florida during the storm, which dropped about 3 feet of snow back home. Of course, Christie defended his decision, calling his critics partisan.
That's as long as you just state a random fact, you know, it can make up for anything you do.
One of my favorites was when Chris Christie landed his chopper on the first baseline of his son's baseball game. I don't know if you remember this one.
No.
Christie faced widespread criticism in 2011 after he was spotted taking a state police helicopter to his son's baseball game. Christie's spokespeople immediately defended the move and said the governor's use of air travel has been extremely limited and appropriate. So, Mike, you paid for the governor to go land to watch his son.
I just wish he came down in the helicopter when he was in that Yankee uniform for that softball game. That'd be so great. He just walked out of the helicopter or flumped out of the helicopter, whatever you want to call it.
Flumped.
I feel make like, up new words.
Well,
for
I feel
Christie.
Like the sound that Christie would make falling out of a helmet would be flump.
Yeah, it makes sense. I know it's not a word, but it makes sense somehow.
The ice cream fight. In his time as governor, Christie made a reputation for taking on critics and not being afraid to engage in heated debates with those who opposed his views and moves. What made 2012 spat different was the ice cream cone, which Christie waved about during an altercation with a heckler on the boardwalk. And of course, it was all caught on camera. If you remember this one, he's like pointing an ice cream cone at someone, like yelling
at them. I just wish
it
was like a triple scoop, and he was pointing at the guy, and like one scoop fell, and he started crying in the middle of the boardwalk.
Or the time he called a Navy SEAL an idiot in a town hall exchange, and it refused to apologize, and or the awkward hug with Jerry Jones in the Dallas Cowboys booth.
He was eating nachos in that booth, if I recall.
Which is always fun when you see the governor at the sitting in the box watching his beloved Cowboys.
And wasn't that at Philadelphia, of all places?
Or was that in? I think it was in Dallas. It
might have been in Dallas.
Oh, yeah, because it was against the Detroit Lions. So
yeah, I think I remember because like, the whole thing on radio was all the Eagles fans was daring him to show up at the link when they played the Eagles.
His evolution of dance with Jimmy Fallon, all those great moves he did.
Well, that was kind of amusing.
I mean, they're there forever, too, which is great. His weird, awkward Obama hug. How can we ever forget that? How can we ever forget the somber look behind Donald Trump when they zoomed in on him and he's just looking...
I remember that.
Looking like he left his...
he was like, am I done? Am I good? Can I get a cabinet spot now?
Yeah, I know. I remember making a meme out of that, like the look on your face when you...
realized you left your sandwich
You left your McMuffin in the car.
Yeah, there you go.
And then, of course, there's a viral baseball pants, the NYPD softball uniform he had on.
The flumping.
Yeah, which became kind of a joke shared around the world. Telling someone at his Hurricane Sandy thing to sit down and shut up. That was a good one. And then, of course, we have Bridgegate, which is a crime that there's two people in prison, and he's just... Nothing happens to him.
Now, I'm kind of surprised you didn't bring up when he was running for president and like people were bringing up the flooding in New Jersey where he told somebody, what do you want me to do, go up with a mop or something to that effect?
Well, it wasn't on this list, but I'm sure there's many
honorable
more.
Mention.
And all the jobs and people's pensions he took. Apparently today, his last day in office, he quickly signed like 50 laws into motion before he left and also gave a couple raises to a specific group of government employees.
To be fair, every single one does that, to be fair.
I don't care. He's a giant piece of garbage.
He did actually speak out against offshore drilling. That's a whole big deal where the president's saying we're releasing the law so you can drill off the coast.
It'll disturb his family members in the ocean.
Do you mind? I'm vacationing out here. Come on now.
Well, I mean, also number one is him using the beach when the beach was shut down.
Yeah.
I mean, that was ridiculous. Like, oh, well, it's the governor.
I was praying it anyway. What do you want me to do? Tell my kids no?
Yeah. It was the governor's house. I mean, we're allowed to use it whenever we want. Well, meanwhile, every other person can't use the beach on, what was it? It was July 4th.
July 4th weekend, yeah.
That's nice.
And if I recall, like 2 weeks later, they basically forced in a law basically saying the governor can't use those, the house during, if there's a government shutdown, just shove it in. And,
yeah. We're really going to miss you, Chris.
Yeah.
We're going to miss you. Anybody,
this
I don't
the
care.
Night we felt alive.
Anyway, I think it's guest time. Enough of our great politicians.
Mm-hmm.
It's always good. So what do we got?
We have coming on here Paul Zaloom. He's an actor and puppeteer.
Zaloom, loom, loom. I want you in my room.
Yeah, he was famous for that song too. But yeah, he's best known for his role as the character Beekman on the television show Beekman's World.
All right. So let's get. I remember him like the. Like almost like the other Bill Nye show. Like they were kind of like, it seemed like they were like competing.
Bill Nye, Where in the World's Carmen Sandiego, all those educational kid shows came out around the 92, 93 time frame.
Yeah. All right, so let's give Mr. Paul Zaloom a call.
Hello.
Hey, is this Paul Zaloom?
It is.
Hey, this is Scott Brennan and Mike Berlow from Verbal Shenanigans. How you doing?
Good, good. How are you guys doing?
Oh, we are doing wonderful. Where are we calling you from?
You mean where?
Well, where are you?
Located?
Yeah, where are you?
I'm in Los Angeles.
Oh, all right.
Nice. So, Paul, you have
and you guys are in Jersey.
In Jersey. We are across the way here.
Yeah.
So, Paul, you. You have a quite a extensive career of some very very unique things that I guess you don't see a lot of actors or comics get into. You're very big in the puppeteering world. Was this something you were interested in as a kid, or was there something that got you into this when you were older?
Well, I went to college at a hippie college in Vermont, and I majored in LSD with a minor in mescaline.
Oh, nice. They still offer
actually,
that?
It was a pretty wild hippie college, and I didn't really, there were no grades and no requirements, any of that bullshit. And I didn't really do anything the first year except, relish my newfound freedom as an alleged adult. And then I hooked up with the Bread and Puppet Theater, which is a kind of iconic 60s neo-German expressionist puppet theater company that was in residence there. And I ended up getting suckered into joining the company. And I'm still associated with the place. I'm on the board of advisors and work there every summer. And so that was a very strong introduction to the world of puppetry, to put it mildly.
Now, I've seen you've been in many different forms, talking about like rod puppets, marionettes, and so forth. Is that all taught at that same college, or did you just pick up others as you went along and expanded like your art?
Yeah, the puppetry wasn't taught there. There was a professional theater company that was in residence that lived on a farm that was part of the campus, and they didn't teach classes. They had workshops. You could go in and learn how to do silkscreen or woodcut printing. And then also they put students from Goddard into puppet shows. And it's how, like, Julie Taymor from The Lion King, you know, the director of The Lion King, that's how she got puppetry. She took a couple of workshops over at Bread and Puppet back in the day. And then, you know, went on to work in Indonesia and on Broadway and all of that. And that's how I got involved. I went down there and took a couple of workshops, and one of them was a performance workshop of a production, and we performed it a few times, and they invited me to join the company, and that's what I did for the rest of my college education. I just worked in this theater company.
Now, what was your home like, home life like, as far as your parents and whatnot, like when you went to this school in Vermont to study puppeteering and acting, were they supportive, or was this more of a decision on yourself?
Well, my sister came to visit me at Goddard. And she told my parents, she said, don't go visit. Don't do it.
That's a good sister.
Yeah, they would have crapped in their pants. I mean, it was just beyond that place. You know, there were no rules.
Right.
I mean, you weren't allowed to have a gun. And there was one guy used to carry around a gun and shoot at stuff all the time. And you weren't allowed to have a dog, and everybody had a stinking dog. I mean, there were dogs all over the place. So, you know, the president of the college, he was not getting along with his wife, so she kicked him out of the president's house, and he moved into one of the dorms. And, yeah, the place was just – it was out of control. There was a lot of people living in the dorms who weren't students. They were just hippies who, like, breezed through there and moved in. So, yeah, it was –
Sounds awesome.
Sounds yeah,
like it was, Burning Man, the college.
Yeah, it was. It was. And Peter Green, you know, from Fleetwood Mac.
Right.
And John Mayall's band, the blues guitar player, he hung around the school and would play with pickup musicians in the laundromat. So you would go and do your laundry. And Peter Green, who was like a guitar god back then, you know, along with, you know, he came out of the band with Mick Taylor from the Stones and mm-hmm. Clapton and all of them, the Mayall's band. So it was, yeah, you know, it was like I died and gone to heaven. It was unbelievable.
Of course it's in the laundromat. Like it's not at the theater or like yeah. some cafe.
Ozzy's in the cafeteria. Yeah. It's weird.
Yeah.
Just showed up.
Yeah.
I mean, that sounds like a wild scene, but I mean, were the classes still structured where you were learning new stuff and like kind of come together with your art, or was it just more kind of party and you kind of came with your own kind of style on puppetry?
Well, you could have a more formal education there if you wanted to, but you know, it was really student initiated and driven. So if you couldn't deal with having that much freedom, you know, you basically had to leave and go to some more straight place. I only took classes my first year, and the rest of my college education, I was just in this theater company, and that's all I did. So it was learning by doing.
Now, when did you start getting serious at, you know, like you said you did the college thing, but when did you start like putting it, you know, hey, maybe I can do this for a career, or were you just like doing it on small productions or community theater? When did you, like, I can't imagine the puppeteer market is that huge where like just tons of jobs everywhere. So did you have to like intern somewhere or just do it as a hobby? And then, like, how did that eventually start to become a serious option?
Well, I took a couple of workshops with the company, and then they invited me to become a member of the company. So there was no internship. There was no in between, you know.
Right.
I got in the company and went on tour. We must have gone on 5 or 6 or 7 European tours. We were like big hits in Paris.
And what were you doing?
The show would sell out.
What was the show?
We did a show called Grey Lady Cantata Number 2 and Birdcatcher in Hell. We had actually 5 shows on that tour, and we would go on tour for 3 months with these shows. Bread and Puppet is actually very well known in the avant-garde theater world and experimental theater world, 60s protest, whatever, along with the Teatro Campesino and the Living Theater and the San Francisco Mime Troupe. They're sort of the 4 companies that people think of when they think of 60s protest or political action theater. Bread and Puppet is one that's still up and running and thriving and after 53 years.
Oh, well. Now, when you're doing all this stuff, you've done a lot of one-man shows and everything, and you have done a lot of writing. Were you always into writing scripts for yourself or for a play, or were you more into, I want to perform, and you kind of eventually evolved into that?
Well, the Bread and Puppet is like, it's not a writerly-based practice, and puppetry really isn't either. It is a very visual theater. And the tradition in puppetry is that it's not playwright-driven or writer-driven. It's really puppeteer-driven. Mm-hmm. And the tradition, which goes back thousands of years, is that puppeteers design their own puppets. They write their own plays. They do everything themselves. Now, that's not necessarily the way it works with all puppeteers today, But that tradition still has a lot of influence on us. And that is the way that Bread and Puppet was. There's a visionary director named Peter Schumann, and he is a painter and a sculptor and a dancer, and he combined all three and ended up doing puppets. And so I came out of this tradition in Bread and Puppet of just making stuff up. So, you know, I wrote and designed the shows myself. And it's where it's all I knew. You know, I didn't come out of like a theater school or a playwright oriented thing, or, you know, I took one acting class, and you know, who was in the class with me was William H. Macy.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. And what's his name? David Mamet was a student at the school at the time and produced his plays at the school. He's since become like a fanatical right winger. So he doesn't look fondly back in his days at Goddard, but his plays, I believe, were first produced at Goddard. Sexual Perversity in Chicago and Lone Canoe, and I remember the shows. You know, I thought they were great. I mean, yeah, whatever.
Now, when did you, like, as you lead into like Beakman and Beakman's world, when did you start getting in front of the camera rather than behind controlling the puppets and stuff like that? When did you decide to give that a shot, or did someone just ask you?
Well, what happened was I did the Bread and Puppet thing for a bunch of years, and then I decided I wanted to do my own work because the shows were more lyrical and painterly, and I wanted and very European, very sort of, you know, German and aesthetic, and I wanted to do something more crass and American and just, you know, vulgar and whatever, and political satire and comedic. I was really interested in doing comedy and having the shows just being funny. So I started making my own shows, and I had gotten this idea to use found objects, just junk, tools, toys, appliances, packaging material, whatever crap I could find lying around, which seemed to me to make a lot of sense, use them as puppets. I didn't know at the time that it was like a big innovation or that I was inventing or helping invent something they now call object theater.
Right.
I didn't think about that and give a shit about it then. I don't give a shit about it now, but I did, you know, it just seemed like a natural jump because I'd grown up with Klaus Oldenburg and Andy Warhol, where, you know, the object became elevated into something that it's not, you know, the soup can. I thought that was hilarious when I was 10 years old. Oh, and it pissed everybody off. All the suburban people I grew up around, you know, it was Andy Warhol and pissing them off, and Muhammad Ali, you know, Cassius Clay was pissing them all off.
Right.
So those were the two things, you know, of course it appealed to me. It was like, oh, this is great. All the Ofays are getting their tits in a twist about Cassius Clay. It was great. So the jump to doing the objects made total sense to me. It's like all this crap that they make for this specific purpose can be used for another devious purpose. And you animate the things and you find out what qualities in them. So anyway, I started doing that. And I made a reputation in New York doing those puppet shows. And around the time of Pee-wee, I met a guy who's a director. And we went to HBO to pitch my shows to do as an HBO special. And they declined. And then, I don't know, a bunch of years later, he called me and said, they're trying to cast this kid show. They can't find anybody to play the part in Hollywood. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's, you think about it, actors, it's so competitive. But if you're a producer in Hollywood, there's no talent in town. If you're an actor, the competition is, like, unbelievable.
Right.
and they just couldn't find anybody weird enough. So they started looking outside of Hollywood, and they came up with me.
Now, when you went in for the audition, I know that the character is based on a comic strip. Did they have an idea what they wanted you to do, or did you provide something on your own and they go, yeah, let's do it that way?
No, they didn't really have an idea. I mean, they were kind of desperate at that point. The clock was ticking. And I had sent in an audition tape, which happened to be of a slideshow, because I used to do slideshows too, and it was about food processing. So I wore a lab coat and a chef's toque, you know, one of those hats, and I talked about food processing. It was a comedy, but I was using slides and real information. So It was kind of science-y already, and that got them excited because the show was actually pretty good. That slideshow was pretty good. And they, you know, they liked it and they responded to it. Then when I did the audition, you know, I didn't know what the hell I was doing. They gave me some beakers and I was supposed to do something. I don't remember what the hell I was supposed to do. But in the middle of it, I knocked one of them over and I spilled water all over the place. And I just vamped. I ad-libbed. I splashed it around. I put it like cologne, you know, on my neck, and, you know, I bathed it and just ad-libbed.
Right.
And I don't know if it was funny or not, but, you know, the civilians, they love that. If you can, if you ad-lib, it's like you're a magician. Like, how the hell can you do that? So I think that's what got me the job, was just the vamping.
Now, when did this thing, like start to take off? Did you like, when you got it, did you think it was going to be anything? Or did you, or was it a surprise? Were you taken by surprise when it actually had some success?
Well, you know, when you shoot something like that on a soundstage, it's really like you're going to the factory and you're making a product and you go home. And once in a while, maybe you're up all night and you turn on the TV and you're on, you know, at 6 o'clock in the morning. It's like, oh, wow, look, that show was good. Ooh, that show not so good. You know, whatever. So I saw it once in a while. After a while, we started looking at the show.
Right.
Once a week, we would look at the last episode. So I saw most of them, and, you know, I don't have hair that sticks up in the air like that, so I'm not recognized on the street. I don't, like, wear a bow tie on screen and off screen, you know, so I don't look – I'm not recognized. So I didn't get a lot of feedback from people on the street, like, unsolicited.
Mm-hmm.
So it was like an anonymous job, and then, you know, so I got on the cover of TV Guide, and Spielberg said, oh, it's the best kids show on TV and blah, blah, blah. And so then there was some juice and some, you know, spin or whatever the hell you call it. And people were into it. And that was great. But, you know, it was a show for smart kids and smart parents. And there's not a lot of those around. So, you know, so I mean, because it really helped if the parents watched the show with the kids. I mean, I don't mean that in the horrible way that it. Well, maybe it.
Yeah, who cares?
I mean, you know, it's not something that's going to appeal to everybody.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the real surprise came when I went to Mexico the first time, and they had booked me into a 600 seat theater, and then they moved it to an 800 seat, and then they said, "Oh, let's put you outside," and then they said, "Can we add a couple of shows?" So I ended up playing for 18,000 people and outside, and, you know, needing security and police escorts.
Really?
And getting mobbed. And, wow. Yeah, I mean, I'm like a rock star in Mexico and Brazil, Argentina and Chile. And that was a huge surprise and a very pleasant one and very amusing.
Well, but how much control did you have on the show? When were you able to, like, pick the questions, have more fun with the skits, or was it a pretty set standard show where it's like, here you go, this is a script, do with it?
It was more of a combination of the two. Because it was television, you know, they have their ways of doing things that's very different than the theater world that I come from. They have very delineated jobs. Like, people have very separate jobs and not a lot of overlap. But on our show, we had a kind of freewheeling atmosphere. We had, you know, really good writers and a really good executive producer and a great team. We would ad lib and goof around on the script and add stuff and subtract stuff, which the writers weren't particularly thrilled about, to put it mildly. But, you know, after a while, they adapted to it. And, you know, they had a really tough job. You know, they got to explain the theory of relativity in 6 minutes to 10-year-olds. I mean, I don't know how the hell you do that. But they did that. And, you know, the thing is, the director, a guy named Jay Dubin, he thinks very visually. He's a very visual guy. He thinks in pictures. So he was constantly pushing for, like, what's on the screen. And he's, you know, the framing and all of that. It was like a painter, you know, approaching the frame. And that was really great. And plus, he really knows science, particularly physics, inside and out. And he's got a great sense of humor. He's from Brooklyn. He's, you know, he's a nut. So the combined, if you put all those things together, and plus just a really nice, fun atmosphere on the stage. You know, the prop guy was, he used to be in a comedy troupe, and he would say, hey, I got an idea, blah, blah, blah. And Jay would say, no, forget it. Or he would say, yeah, okay, let's do it. And he went on to another TV show, and he made a suggestion on the stage for an idea. And the producer said, one more suggestion and you're fired.
Jeez.
So, you know, ours is not like a really typical atmosphere, and we just laughed our asses off all day long. All we did was like goof off and have a lot of laughs, and you know, it was just a really nice atmosphere. And I think that had a lot to do with the, I think that read, you right. know, I think the audience could tell by looking at it that we were having fun.
Now did you, you know, did you have a science background at all, or like
no
not at all? Well, I was going to ask you, like, with that and, like, with something like Bill Nye being on, was there like, a competition or, like, did people compare you guys all the time?
Yeah, I think, as far as I'm concerned, no, I was not in a competition with the guy. I was brought up a Quaker. I don't believe in that stuff. But other people perceived it that way. And I know Bill did, because he badmouthed me in the press. He said, you know, he said, I'm a real scientist, and Zaloom's an actor. And then he said, Zaloom's a performance artist and whatever. But, I just think the more science shows, the better, you know,
right.
The more the merrier. And, you know, I'm not interested in competing with anybody or comparisons. You know, they're very different shows, very different approaches. And, you know, he took it upon himself to insult me and stuff like that. But I don't find that it's not necessary for me to respond in kind. Although I kind of already have by just bringing it up. But, you know, I just don't give a shit. You know, there's just there's so many more important things in life.
Ugh,
and
yeah,
and the irony, of course, is finding out that Beekman is massively famous across the entire continent of Latin America. So there's something quite gratifying and hilarious.
And why about is that? Was it like, were you syndicated there, or like why in Latin America did it blow up?
Well, I ask people that all the time down there, and they say, oh, because you teach science so well. And it's like, no, that's not the reason.
Yeah.
No, forget it. And nobody knows down there. And yeah. I finally figured it out. It's number one, because kids' television down there sucks, by and large. That's what everybody tells me. It's just terrible.
Mm-hmm.
Two, there's something about the sensibility, just the sensibility of the show, the way it looks, the pacing, the concept. There's something about that that appeals to the Latin sensibility. I mean, that's kind of an obvious statement. But then three, the other thing is, I think, again, because of the culture in Latin America, kids, a lot of these kids were like latchkey kids or whatever, and they would get home, they'd sit in front of the TV. And the thing about Beekman was, he was really close to the camera. Like, his big ugly face was really big in the screen, and he's looking right directly at the kid, like right into the kid's eyes. And that is an emotional connection that happens. And people don't mob me, and I don't get scared from being crushed to death and need police escorts in and out of places because people think I'm a good science teacher.
Right.
They do it because there was an emotional connection that performer character made with them when they were children that has a very deep emotional resonance to them. And I find that, you know, I think that's utterly fascinating. And it doesn't have a hell of a lot to do with me. It has a lot to do with all the people who are involved in the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I tend to get 110% of the credit, which is unfortunate because it was a big team of people that made it happen. But it has been, it is really interesting to me.
Now, your show went for 5 years. When they said it was going to end, was there a lot of sadness? Was there a lot of, okay, I'm going to go on to the next thing? What was the thoughts when it finally came to the end?
Well, we kind of knew they were just shooting for 91 episodes because you don't need as many episodes to go into syndication as you do with a sitcom.
Right.
Mm. Partially because the show is evergreen because, you know, most science doesn't expire or become dated.
I don't know, man. Kids, Pluto's not a planet anymore.
That's true.
Yeah, yeah. You had to mention that, didn't you? I'm talking to Pluto later. He's pissed off. So also, the kids grow up. So the audience is on the move all the time.
Hmm.
It's not like Friends, you know, the audience, you know what I'm saying? Because yeah. It's a kid's show. The kids are moving. So they just didn't need more than 91 episodes.
Right.
So we knew once they hit 91, they would probably bail on it. It was not a big moneymaker. You know, they were in the Seinfeld business and the Who's the Boss business and Married with Children and shit like that. That was where, you know, they made billions of dollars. Beekman was like chump change to them.
Right.
And the only reason they did it was because of the Children's Television Act in 1991. Which required a certain amount of educational and or informational programming for children to be on local television stations if they wanted their licenses renewed.
Interesting.
So they came up with this idea, let's take this comic strip and turn it into a show to sell to these affiliates so that they can satisfy the requirements of that that law passed by Congress.
That's interesting. I mean, and now, like, I know I read that, you know, you still do Beekman and whatnot. And, like, with everything, like, nostalgic, like, when it comes down to, you know, older show, everyone has these nostalgia for either it's the cartoons or shows like yours. And I see that you've done things like the Fringe Festival and all these things. Is there talks of, like, Beekman coming back on air or Netflix or anything like that? And also, the other thing I wanted to know is, like, as far as, like, since it is based off a comic strip and a show, like, is it still a group of people that, like, have the rights to Beekman, or are you, like, the only guy?
Well, the show is based on a syndicated comic.
Right.
That was in the Andrews McMeel Publishing Company, University Press Syndicate, I think is.
Uh-huh.
Or Universal something. And they were also the co-producers of the show with Sony and Columbia Pictures Television. So they own the rights to the show. The creator was a guy named Jock Church. He's the guy who made the comic. And it was the first comic made on a Mac.
Okay.
And he unfortunately died a couple of years ago. He was a great guy, really dynamic, super creative dude who had done tons of different interesting shit in his life. And we were very close, actually, the two of us. So his estate owns the rights to Beekman. But I, you know, I have always been allowed to perform as the character, which I've been doing, you know, for a number of years. And I play in the States to kids that they bus into, you know, from schools in often in pretty big venues like 1,000-seat theaters. Because the teachers remember the show or whatever, and when I've been on tour, they'll book the show.
Right.
And the kids don't know who the hell I am, but they don't care. And so long as the show is good and entertaining and is a little bit vulgar, they're going to love it. It may piss the teachers off.
Right.
Because there's too many snot or farting or burping jokes or whatever. But that's, you know, that's always been our MO, so why stop now? And then in Mexico, I play almost never to kids. It's a big nostalgia thing with the anime crowd, the Dragon Con
people. I would say there's so much room for nostalgic shows and comics and things like that now. It's like you said, with the cons and all that, like there's – I feel like nothing ever goes away permanently if it left the mark.
Yeah, it is really interesting to play those events down there, because there'll be young people anywhere from like 16 to late 30s, because the show's been on the air down there for many years, you know, on and off. And it's basically, I don't speak Spanish. I do the show in English, and there'll be simultaneous translation. But the audience tends to be pretty highly educated and knows English pretty well.
Right. Mm.
And it's I do a number of scientific demonstrations, but there's a lot of audience interaction. I get a lot of people up on stage and get them to do stuff. And so there's a huge amount of improvisation. And that's where a lot of the comedy comes from, is mm-hmm. just goofing around with people on stage.
Right.
And so that's the best way for me to perpetuate the aesthetic of the show, or the fun and the laughs and the, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
They're not necessarily coming to the show to hear me talking, you know, explaining
right.
simple scientific principles. They want that guy. They want to see and hear that guy and get and have some laughs and make that connection to something that they really revered when they were kids. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So is there any future for Beekman? Like, are we going to see him again? Or,
well, there is no interest in the American entertainment,
right.
you know, Goliath. I've never heard of any interest. The problem is that it would, you know, the show was expensive then. Cost, I don't know, $200,000 or $300,000 an episode.
Wow.
And nobody spends that kind of money on kids' TV anymore, unless it's product, super product based. You know, live action kids yeah. shows are yep. kind of rare. And plus, you know, the guy in the rat suit, Lester, he was an amazing and integral part of the show. And brought a huge amount to the table. He's enormously talented and wonderful, beautiful human being. And he passed away, I think, in 2010. And he was a great friend. And, it would right. be impossible to replace him. And I just think it would be really hard to have something up to that mm-hmm. that level.
Right.
The only way I think it would work is if you did it actually with puppets. I think you could do a Beekman puppet show, and that would be interesting, would probably work on some level, because it's so different than live action that there would be no comparison.
Now, since Beekman, you've wrote a couple of movies and worked on those in different ways, and Smoke and Thunder and Dante's Inferno. Can you tell us a little bit about why you... jumped into that realm, and are you exploring more in the future to make more movies like this?
Well, I collaborated with this painter in Los Angeles named Sandow Burke, and Elise Pignolet, his wife and artistic partner, and a director named Sean Meredith. And we made a couple of films, one which was about a fictional war between San Francisco and L.A. And we basically, Sandow had made this huge exhibit with fake historical paintings and sculptures, everything fake, about a fake war between San Francisco and L.A. And the reason he did it was he's an artist. He's based in Long Beach, and he has a gallery, Catherine Clark, down in or up in San Francisco. And he'd go up there for an opening of the show, and he'd go out with all the artists, weirdos who would show up to his opening afterwards. They all have beers and stuff. And one of them would say to him, so, you know, where do you live? And he'd say, L.A. And they'd go, oh, my God. And they would rag on L.A. And he got sick of it. So he thought, OK, I'll make this fictional war, because there is a big cultural war. You know, they're all snobs up there, and they think that their shit doesn't stink. And, you know, L.A. is all like sitcom, you know, shallow,
yep.
you know, and which is roughly correct. But I mean, you know, it just and, you know, San Francisco, L.A. is like a behemoth. You know, it's like the elephant and the flea. You know, the elephant doesn't feel the flea biting it. So it was, he made a really funny satire, and then we made a mockumentary using his drawings and paintings and sculptures with voiceover. And I co-wrote that with Sandow, with Sean. And then the Dante's Inferno, he had done Dante's Inferno set in hell, being L.A., basically. And he said, let's make a movie. And he wanted to do a live action movie. I said, let's do puppets. Let's do toy theater. We'll make little paper puppets of all this shit and we'll jiggle it around and it'll be hilarious. And he and Sean were like, forget about it. You know, puppets. What are you kidding me? I don't want to do puppets. But I took him up to the toy theater museum that was in Santa Ana. And I showed him some books and stuff like that. And they totally got hooked and totally got into it. Mm-hmm. And it, you know, it was, I mean, it was interesting to shoot because you're shooting on something that's the size of like a couple of card tables. So you have to have tiny cameras. You got to have, you know, the lighting's weird.
Yep.
Everything's really small. But it was a gas. It was a total gas. And I think the show turned out pretty good. Yeah. And toy theater is great. You know, toy theater is a tradition that dates back to Europe in the 1800s where these publishing companies, mainly in England, would print these broadsheets and kids would buy them. They'd cut them out and they glue them to a piece of cardboard and they put a popsicle stick on the thing. And then it came with a proscenium and everything and scripts. So they would set these stages up and have the characters and the scenery and they would do the plays in their living rooms and bore the crap out of their parents. And it was a gigantic fad. There was no television or Nintendo or any of that crap. So this was like a humongous thing. And Great Small Works, a theater company here in the States, sort of brought back toy theater. And it has become a big revival in the States. And basically, it's just a miniature proscenium with a little rag in the front that goes up and the action happens and then the curtain closes. And, you know, it's like a theater, except tiny. And we made everything out of paper. And the show I'm touring now, the puppet show, is called White Like Me, a hunky-dory puppet show. And it's about the, you know, trials and tribulations of being a Caucasian male.
The roughness.
Yeah, let me tell you. The calluses on my brain, on my feet. Yeah, so I do that in toy theater, but I don't use paper puppets. I use found objects and toys and action figures and tools and this crap and that crap and mix it all together in there and do a little satire about the history of the white man.
I love it.
So, Paul, Paul, it's been a real pleasure to talk to you, and I like how easygoing you are and how you don't take yourself too seriously. And it sounds like you still are finding ways to stay creative and stay to your roots, but yeah, always exploring and whatnot. I just had one question before we go. Well, I guess two. One, where can people go to check you out or send you a message, say hi, or see what you're doing and what are you doing? And the second one was, since you're doing all this science stuff and you don't have a science background, was there any type of like science disaster that ever happened on the show, or you mixed something or did something backwards or explosion or something, like, you know, something out of a sitcom that would happen?
Yeah, I mean, there were a couple of things that were we had a crocodile or an alligator or some goddamn thing.
That's always the best way to start a story, by the way.
It's all like bolted to the table and it just sits there like a plate of lox. It doesn't move the whole time. You think it's dead. And I'm yakking away at the camera. And at one point, it just whips its head around and chomps in my direction in like a billionth of a second. And I scream like a little girl and ran halfway to Burbank, you know. So that was mildly amusing.
Yep.
We had a lion on the show, and that was, you know, it was one of the only times we had a closed set, because we had an open set. We didn't give a shit. People want to come in, wander around, who cares?
Right.
But we closed the set because there's a lion. So the lion is behind me, and there I am, and the camera's in front of me, and the tamer is behind the camera. He's got like a sirloin steak on a stick. And he's waving around over the camera. And you see the line in the back of his head bobbing back and forth. And, you know, I'm all that there is between the lion and the steak. So it was like, usually I didn't care if we did 10 or 20 takes, but this one I was really looking forward to getting over with. That was unnerving. And I got stuck inside the nose when we did the snot episode. And they took a five, you know, they all like took the five and they forgot about me. And I'm in there in a hazmat suit and I'm covered in snot and I'm stuffed in this sauna tube. And I was having a hard time breathing. And they're all out there like smoking cigarettes and, you know, going to the bar or whatever the hell they did. And the executive producer could hear me on the speaker because, you know, everything was piped up to the offices. And I'm going, is anybody out there? It's a little stuffy in here. I'm having a hard time breathing. And he's like panicking. But, yeah, shit happened all the time.
Stuck in the nose. Great great name for your
the famous
your book.
Snot episode.
So where Indeed. Can people go check you out, Paul?
Well, I have been not a good internet interfacer, but I'm undergoing a revolution in my thinking. Zloom.com and BeekmanLive.com. They're not particularly updated, but I as things progress, they will be appearing there. I've been mainly touring the puppet shows in Europe. I was just in Estonia and Portugal and in Slovenia and in Sicily and Turkey and kind of exhausted all the trips here in the States. But I'm thinking about doing some video projects, so Zloom.com and BeekmanLive.com would be the place to go.
Awesome. Well, we couldn't tell that you were great at the internet when you said you weren't a good internet interfacer.
Yes.
He doesn't know internet. World. He doesn't know science.
Yeah, I'm just a wizard, everything.
Paul, thank you so much for giving us some time. It was a pleasure to talk to you, man, and good luck with everything you have going on in the future.
Well, thanks so much. Thanks for having me.
Very cool.
Awesome, yeah.
What the hell?
Oh, celebration's back on again. Back to Chris Christie.
No. Zaloom is on the cast. All right.
Zaloom. I like how he's like this child, like kooky, quirky character, but yeah, he's like, yeah, I don't give a crap about it.
It's a weird thing, like the Mark Summers thing, like when they curse. I mean, obviously we don't care, but in the back of my head, I'm kind of like, are you allowed to say that? I mean, I know you haven't been on your show in like 20 years, but a lifelong contract. You can never curse.
But I did notice he won the Village Voice Obie Award.
I was going to bring that up.
Whatever that is. But you're named after my dog there.
Yeah.
But the great Paul Zaloom.
Awesome time.
All right, Berlo. It's second guest time. Second guess time.
You're the second guess. You're the second guess. You may be second, but you're still the best.
We love you, no matter what you do, even though you're associated with number two.
Mm. I like what you did there.
Yeah, that was all improv.
Yeah, we could probably be the new Cranberries lead singers.
It was funny. Real quick, I did a show at a winery on Saturday night down in Ringo's, New Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
And it was beautiful, great show, great, awesome show, fun show. I got paid well and about like 120, maybe something like that. But
wow.
great show. But it's funny. It was the whitest crowd like ever. Like, you know, winery crowd, you expect pretty white crowd, but they were
so who likes mayonnaise?
it was so like scarves and shirt and like I was just like, I went up to open the show and I was like, wow. I'm like, Helene booked me on the show. She's like, come do my urban room. It's real diverse. And I'm like, I just like looked at all of them. I'm like, I think this is where they filmed Get Out. it was funny, man. They were so – it was a rocking show, though. But anyway, let's go back to our guest.
Yeah.
Who we got?
We have Matt Weingarten coming on the show.
Matt Weingarten?
Yeah. He is the culinary director for Dig In, a growing farm-to-table restaurant with 22 locations in New York and Boston.
22. I just want to own one location this summer. Like, I'm tired of working.
All right. You get South Boston.
All right. A Southie? That's fine.
Yeah, why not?
All right. So, let's give Matt a call.
Hello?
Yeah, hi. Is this Matt?
Yes, it is.
Matt, it's Scott Brennan and Mike Berlo here from Verbal Shenanigans. Welcome to the show. Thank you, man.
Thank you. Nice to be here.
So where are you at the moment?
At the moment, I am enjoying being home in my study, which is a little bit of a rarity, but I thought I'd go someplace where we could actually hear each other talk. So I decided to take the call here.
Well, after you talk to us, you wish you were in the noisy restaurant. I had to be honored. Yeah.
Well, I also love that you have a study. That's so... It's beautiful. Bring that back. More people need studies.
Yeah, the only place I know of a study is in Clue right now.
Colonel Mustard.
I have a candlestick right here.
So where are you? Are you in New York or?
I live in Brooklyn. So close enough to all the restaurants, and I love living here in this wonderful food city.
So Matt. Mike was telling me that you have something like 21 locations or something like that.
We currently, as of right now, we have 19 and about around that many more sort of in the works. I think we're up to 24 wow. that are at live that we're building out kitchens for, et cetera.
Well, okay. So, I mean, that's amazing, obviously. But when you started this idea or not, how did you come up with the idea? And how does it stand apart from... Like, you know, we see a lot of like farm to table and kind of, you know, healthy conscious foods and whatnot. How did the idea start? And then are you amazed that this quick you have 19 locations already?
Well, let's see. So Diggin was founded by Adam Eskin, our founder, in 2011. And he originally comes from the finance world, but was always interested in... healthy eating and healthy living. And I would say that while neither of us are surprised at how well we're doing and how quickly it's sort of taken off, it is very humbling. But we go to work every day with a very simple thought in mind that we want to build community through food. We want to buy food that's transparent, that we know where it comes from, and we want to cook it really well. And, you know, apparently that's pretty relevant to folks right now, which makes me doubly hopeful. So, so that's where we get to today. The second part of, we're a for-profit business. We want to have a bunch of successful restaurants, but what we're also really trying to do is impact change, and try to think about producing food and working with farmers in a much more collaborative way. And in order to have really big impact, we are desirous of some pretty large growth to help drive that change and to be, you know, to hopefully change the way a lot of food is grown and distributed throughout the country and hopefully serve the happy guests. So all that gets to this kind of crazy growth plan that we have in mind.
Now, when I was trying to research and get new guests, I was searching under healthy fast foods, and that's how I came across Dig In. As a person who's been going to college and learning the culinary arts, is it kind of a bad term to hear the phrase fast food, or are you kind of more prominent on looking at the healthy side than worry about the phrase fast food?
Sure. So, I don't associate myself with fast food as a phrase. You hear fast casual. We like to think we sort of invented our own category, which is fine fast and fine casual. Mm-hmm. And what we're trying to create in our restaurants is a combination of food served quickly and conveniently to our guests in a way that still gives them choice via our market line. And in a way that ultimately the food's delicious, which is what hopefully brings everybody in, and it allows them to sort of create their own vision of sort of how they want to interact with their food and how they want to have a healthy lifestyle, et cetera. So, I don't disparage sort of any terminology. I just sort of focus on how we think about building, and again, that as it were, it seems to be what our guests want, so we're pretty pleased with that.
So now, after the first business gets put in place and whatnot, how does this work for people who like may just go dine with you or whatnot? Now the whole farm to table thing. So you're opening. So say you're opening one in Brooklyn. Do you go out and contract like all your ingredients? Like okay, let it. let's go to the closest farms? Do you have someone that puts you in touch with your, you know, providers? How does this work behind the scenes here?
Yeah, so there is a lot of work that happens behind the scenes to operate our restaurants with fluidity. My supply team is as engaged with my real estate team as any part, because they want to know where we're going well before we get there, because they need to start building those relationships. And so we have a bunch of geographies mapped out of places that we're interested in going towards. And so my supply team is already working on building those partnerships. What's really wonderful and humbling about the farming community, especially the farming community that we directly engage with, is it's a great community. So we've been very blessed by just telling folks, you know, oh, we want to go here. You know, someone can grow potatoes here. And that network, which we're very supportive of, has been very supportive of us in terms of introducing us to different partners or saying, oh, you know, you need to call so-and-so, et cetera. And we're kind of known in the business as being really good partners, which is what we pride ourselves on. And that engenders a lot of goodwill amongst the farming community, because we really do look at it as a partnership.
Now, with dealing with both New York City and Boston, do both sites have a different menu, considering you only have certain farms to deal with? And is there any limitations, considering you can only do certain local foods? Like, I'm guessing you can't have pineapple anywhere in New York or Boston.
It's so good. We were discussing pineapple in my menu development meetings not so long ago. So just to be very specific, we're not strictly local. And so while we prefer to we will always buy local when possible, we're looking at supporting regionality. And so in any given food shed, we're trying to, you know, we're currently very focused on sourcing mostly from the East Coast, which is, you know, local from, you know, Florida to Maine, which to some they say, oh, well, that's not local. But if it's a choice for us, if you look at the map from going down to Florida in the winter on the Northeast to purchase some carrots or sweet potatoes or what have you, as opposed to sort of shipping them to California or from abroad, China, we definitely like that trade. And we think that it's still very solid on the carbon footprint. Outside of that, as far as diversity of menu, we have a similar menu in both Boston and New York right now, and that was a strategic move for us to sort of get comfortable about working in two markets. What we envision for the future is to have a core menu that is similar throughout our locations, but that will be very much driven by our chefs that run our restaurants in each of the different regions to serve some food that is relevant to those communities themselves, along with in a way that allows the individual chefs to express themselves. And what that really looks like is we're very focused on such things as, that are hyper local. So say, you know, asparagus has a very short run. We may not have a specific dig-in recipe for that asparagus. Our vision is to tell our chefs, hey, in a month's time, in 6 weeks' time, we're going to be getting asparagus from X and X farmer. You're going to have access to this. Work with your area chef, which would be their direct boss in the region, to come up with some recipes and serve them at your restaurants. That's very exciting for us as an organization to think about growing and scaling a business in that regard.
Now, for the person that's never been to your restaurant, can you give us like a synopsis or a style of what the food what can we expect? Like if we're going in there trying it for the first time, what are we seeing? What are the things you would recommend? What are the most popular items? So what is your food like?
Sure. Okay. Most popular items, we serve tons of sweet potatoes. It's kind of one of our signature dishes. Kind of always on our menu. It hits all the right spots. It's a vegetable that we love.
Right.
It's got tons of vitamins. It fills you up. It's warm. We roast it so the edges are nice and crispy. and serve it simply with some sea salt, olive oil, and rosemary. A really deceptively simple and delicious dish. We talk about with our chefs that we're trying to sort of recreate the perfect, you know, sweet potato fry, if you will, though it's a roasted wedge sweet potatoes. So that's on the menu. Our general philosophy is always about food that tastes good first and is good for you secondarily, and it errs on the side of simplicity. Within each menu season, we serve two different grains as a base. So right now in the winter, I have farro with some butternut and some preserved orange, and we have a simple classic brown rice. You can also choose to get marco greens, which are locally sourced greens, the nice rosemary vinaigrette. And then you can choose from two seasonal vegetables. Like I said, sweet potatoes are a big seller for us, but right now I'm really excited about some coconut roasted carrots we have on our menu. We have a hot kale with butter bean ragu. We have a beautiful kale salad with honey nut squash. We have this great dish, which is broccoli three ways, that we use both the stem and the leaf and the broccoli florette, and that comes in a nice ginger dressing. And then you can choose from a couple of sustainably sourced meats if you choose, or you can get a third vegetable. And that bowl costs you between $10 and $13, and you're on your way. Really nice, thoughtfully composed meal.
Oh, sounds wonderful. Now, you got a huge background in the culinary arts. Something I always want to ask chefs, do you have an ingredient that's out there that you can't stand no matter what? Like, to me, as just a normal guy, I can't stand celery. I haven't found a way to make it. Is there such a thing for a chef where it's like, no, we're not putting that in there?
You know, I think definitely chefs have taste like anybody else. We're just human, man. I personally have a pretty pretty varied palate, and I'm a very, very adventurous eater. That said and done, I am offended by some food pairings. I'm more easily turned off by, like, why would you put that with that? That doesn't make any sense. As opposed to you know, picking on a particular ingredient. So that's just, you know, I'm thinking about composition in the end. But you know, we just cook a lot more. I think we still, you know, chefs as a whole have similar quirky tastes.
Now, is there a popular one in question? You talk about the combinations in particular you want to bring up, or?
Oh wow, you put me on the spot here. Let's see, what else? This is good. Things that I don't like together. God, I can't give you anything good right now, but I'm very focused on mouthfeel. I don't like that if a bunch of food is mushy next to each other.
Hmm.
So, like, for the record, like, my team knows that if they ever serve me a wrap, which just for me personally is, like, the worst thing on the planet in terms of, like kind of a soft wrapping and then, like, some soft food on the inside, that really turns me off. luckily we don't serve any wraps at the restaurant right now. And I know a lot of people like wraps, so I don't want to disparage them, but that's just my personal
Wraps, man. Yeah.
There you go. Sorry, man.
So with the success that you guys have been having and, you know, the kind of interest that's been going on, what is the future or the things on the horizon for the company? What should people, fans of Diggin, be looking forward to?
Fans of Diggin should just be looking forward to hopefully more Diggins near them, which seems very sort of self-congratulatory, but I think that you know, we do get a lot of messages like, oh, when are you going to bring one by us? And so that's very encouraging. I think they will begin to see even more diversity of our menu within local Diggins by them as we really sort of power up our chefs to work within their communities and like I said, go a little bit off of sort of just a core menu that you sort of see in a typical large chain model. This is what we do, and you get it the same exact everywhere. We're very interested in this idea of consistent, delicious experience everywhere you go, with the change of ingredients, and that's just driven by the ingredients themselves. Other things that we're constantly trying to push our own boundaries of how to think about food. We have some fun things on the works in terms of vegan and vegetarian mains, if you will. We're excited about a couple other main entrees. We don't serve a lot of pork right now. We don't serve a lot of lamb right now. We may be putting that on the menu. Just more culinary excitement overall.
As a culinary director, are you still able to be hands-on and cook stuff for the company, or is it more of a corporate job where you're setting menus?
Oh God, I would die if I had such a corporate job. I am very blessed. I get to go in my kitchen and work alongside our staff every single day. I think it's I personally view it as a perk of my job. I mean, the whole company is arranged as such. We try to make sure that in a lot of organizations, it's sort of you go up the ladder in any way, and all of a sudden the folks that are really good at what they do, they are now just sort of managing in charge of a bunch of other folks, and they don't get to express what they're best at. We try to avoid that as we built our company. And so I cook every day. My area chefs are involved in food every day. Our chefs are involved in food every day. And it's why I fell in love with this business. I love being in kitchens. I love seeing young cooks, and I love being inspired by talented chefs. And so, I definitely don't have this big corporate job. I don't have a desk at our headquarters. I spend most of my time, very luckily, side by side with our line cooks every day, just sort of seeing how everything's going and cooking up some good food with them.
One last question for you. As a cook and doing training with chefs, what are your thoughts on these television shows with, like, the Gordon Ramsays and so forth? Is that your training style? Do you enjoy those kind of shows? Do you like yelling at people? What's it like in your training program?
You know, it's a different time right now, and I think that's all for the better. I mean, I definitely grew up in some intense kitchens myself, but we definitely come from a very nurturing background, which is not to be conflated or confused with sort of the demands of the job. I mean, my staff knows exactly what I'm looking for and how we want, you know, what a perfectly cooked sweet potato looks like and what we're desirous of. That we have a phrase, everybody, you know, cook for a person, that every single apple that you grill matters. It's not, and it's important that we inspire, each of our cooks to do that. But in order to do that, we provide a good amount of training, and we view everybody, on a journey, and that they're going to come to us with some experience or no experience or a lot of experience. And it's our job just to take them from that level up one rung, up two rungs, up four rungs, and really sort of elevate their experience with us. So we have a farm upstate that we are able to host our cooks and chefs to go up there and see the food house being cooked. I have a kitchen in my headquarters that when I am there, we're often teaching knife skill classes or going over taste profiles or learning the new dishes for a new menu rollout or just doing something fun like learning how to pull apple strudel just to keep the culinary engine running. And then we have a bunch of chefs in our restaurants that their number one focus every day is to train and develop their staff and we take it very seriously.
That's awesome, man. Matt, I want to thank you so much for coming on and giving us a couple minutes, and good luck with everything you got going on and new restaurant openings and hopefully we get one here down in central North Jersey. If people want to go check this out and haven't really had it before or never heard of it, where should they go?
Well, we have locations in Manhattan and Westchester and a bunch up in Boston as well. Hopefully be soon in a city near you, and check out our locations at vegan.com.
That's awesome, man. Thank you so much for giving us a few minutes, and good luck, man.
Thank you so much. Nice chat.
Appreciate it.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
All right. I'd like to eat there.
Yeah, definitely. It'd be way better than that time I did the laundry pod challenge.
Oh, you did that?
No. I'm just saying it probably
would
taste
better. If there was a if we figure out this shenanigan thing, I'm gonna make that your 50-pointer. do the pod challenge.
God, I want to eat some digging. No, you bite into this tide, young man.
You shut your mouth and you chew that like a good boy. I was thinking about food before. What is your what is your weakness with food? Like does something get you
see
like
it, I have to have it?
Yeah, or like you eat too much of it, or like when you have it, you overindulge, or like something that you shouldn't have, like a guilty pleasure, or just like something you like a lot. It doesn't even have to be bad for you.
I'm trying to think. My biggest thing is if like I'm at a party and they have like appetizers out, like dips and stuff like that, I will just chow down on that for like an hour nonstop. I will be trying every combination of chip with different dips and vegetable with this thing and that. So dinner comes along and I eat like only like a quarter of what I'm given and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's just, I'm just a picker. If it's not in front of me, I'm pretty good. I don't like go out of my way to get junk food.
Do you crave sweets at all, or are you a sweet guy?
I guess it depends on the mood. Sometimes I feel like sweet. Sometimes I feel like salty stuff. You know?
I'm definitely like a salty kind of guy. Like if there's meat in the fridge, like if I make a bunch of pork chops or chicken breast or something like that, and I'm like, oh, I'll save some of these for lunch tomorrow. I like walk by the fridge.
9 o'clock.
Grab one. You know, and I'll eat it with my hand. Like I love cold meat.
Yeah.
Like for some reason, like I love grabbing like a chicken breast out of the fridge and just munch. I remember me and this kid used to play basketball in this league in Newark. We played it like an adult league, but it was in Newark, so it was pretty good competition and pretty intense games. And I remember like we had this conversation on the way to the game, and he's like, "What pumps you up? What pumps you up?" I'm like, you know what pumps me up? When I have cold meat in the fridge, cold when I got cold, and then it was so funny because it took a life of its own. He's like, I love cold meat too. And when like we'd be on the court, like if he got like a if he got like, because he was like a little taller than me, and he played basketball, so he would have some big plays on the big board sometimes, like throw him down every once in a while, and we'd just be like, call me on the court, like we'd be like, call me, son. We'd be down by like 6 points, be like, dude, when you call me,
you see the coach come out with like, all right, this pork chop has been in the fridge for 4 hours, Scott. You gotta give me 8 points if you want this, Scott.
It became like our call, like our like it would be funny to be like, on the way home, he'd be like, "Ah, I wasn't getting cold meat today. I was garbage. I was terrible." But I'd be like, "Dude, you were cold meating it up." Like it just became its own language. I just thought of that right now. I haven't thought about that in years. But be like, "Ah, oh, cold meat, son." And then like I remember at one point, like, you know, remember how Shaq like would like make the signs for his like fraternity back in the day?
Yeah.
Like when he'd run down the court, he'd be throwing C's up, CM. Like, call me.
CM, baby.
That's my weakness. I like ice cream a lot.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not, like, it's like the only sweet I really, but like every time I eat sweets, it's usually out of I'm hungry. I'm like, oh, there's sweets in the house, and I eat it. I'm like, oh, this is good, and then I eat too much of it, and then I'm done with. I feel sick after like a minute or like a couple minutes afterwards, and then I'm done with sweets for like another 4 months.
Yeah, I mean, my thing is if it's in front of me, that's the problem. It's like, all right, it's going down. And also, if it's like, do you feel like, and in the back of my head, I'm like, no, I really don't. But then I'm like, oh, all right. So it's like, you feel like an appetizer? Oh, no, not really. But all right, we'll do it. And
let's go.
Have the appetizer, have the dinner. You feel like dessert? No, not really. But okay, let's do it. Let's do it. And you just keep on shoving in. I guess it's related to food. Sorry, I can tell you. Like when my dad worked at the can company, If they made cans that were incorrect and the soda companies filled it up, they would ship it back and they would have to like redo the cans and send them out. So there was a lot of times my dad would be like, all right, they would be selling like cheap cans of soda. So my dad came home one time with like 24 cases of Sunkist orange soda. And, like, I remember he would, like, point to me. He's like, all right, we're keeping it in the garage. You're only allowed one Sunkist a day. I'd be in summer. It'd be, like, 100 degrees in that garage. I'd be drinking warm Sunkist. I'd have, like, 12 Sunkists in a day.
Well, it's just, like, I remember what crap I ate growing up, man. Those little Debbie cakes were so big.
Oh, crack.
The cosmic brownies, the zebra cakes.
The oatmeal brown.
Going to school, I would always have those stupid zebra cakes. Mm-hmm. And every day they got squashed in my lunchbox. And it would be like, it wasn't a cake, it was like zebra shrap, like confetti when you got it. And you'd still eat it.
You'd have to like scrape it off that little cardboard piece they gave you.
Terrible. But let's take a break. So before we get out of here, well, we actually got a big salmon, little chunk coming in a minute. But last week we kind of over-recorded. We did a long episode, and this didn't quite fit into the episode. Yeah. So we
and that was a good podcast with Mike Stern from Pixar and who's the
other one? Sean Sweeney from Jane Goodall Foundation. Yeah, like two really interesting people. Mm-hmm. Like,
so check that one out.
Yeah. For sure. Like, Disney Pixar animator. Sean Sweeney is from Jane, like, works with Jane Goodall, which is, I don't know, it's pretty amazing to me. But the point is, we created a Me Too pool, which I'm sure people have done or whatnot, but.
Well, most people do, like, a death pool every year of, like, famous celebrities who are going
to I got offered to be in a death pool a couple of times. I don't know. I feel like it's just bad karma.
Mm-hmm.
I have some ideas of people I would put in the death pool, but I couldn't commit to it. This one comic runs like a legit, like, there's like body count, like age. Like, if it's someone younger, you get the points like to 100. Wow. If they're 100, it's ridiculous.
A little too scientific to root for.
Yeah, just also like, I'm like, I don't know. I don't need to participate.
So we have something more humble.
Yeah, so we did the Me Too pool, which, again, is going to be like anyone who is accused of some kind of sexual harassment or just conduct, like bad conduct
sexual
to women
conduct. Yeah.
Or men.
Yeah.
So, which
and
is funny.
And the key is accused. Does that have to be they did it?
Well, headline on some news source is basically the criteria. Like, because the news is all crap anyway, so. Yeah.
Burlew.com.
Big Burl's got job. Like, dude, come on. It's not me.
I'll create an app and put it on your phone so you get the beeps and all. Exclusive. Exclusive.
Mike, every guy you chose is coming up weekly.
Every 5 minutes, too. You don't double up points.
So we don't really know how we're going to score it. It's more just for fun. There's no real stakes in this one.
I was about to say.
Which we still got to go to Medieval Times.
Yeah, for my big shenanigan showdown victory.
Yep, and just a good night out. That'd probably be fun.
Yep.
But so last week we were talking. We each came up with 25 names of people that we think could be on the list in the next year or so. And since we did that in just a week like, we did it last week. So the day after I messaged you, James Franco got popped.
Mm-hmm.
And one of yours is Seth Rogen, which you'll hear in a minute, which I found funny. So it's like 1 degree away, you know.
Because that's based off the joke where you put up on Facebook, Al Roker can't be too far, and then Matt Lauer got accused, and you're like, damn it! They're in the same studio!
Same church, different pew. and then Aziz Ansari yesterday or 2 days ago got popped. And again, regardless, it's all just accusations, and I'm sure a lot of them are false, but it's just a little game we're going to play. So here is a clip from last week. It's pretty long about who we picked and why, so you guys could play along at home, and we'll post online, I guess, who we picked. And so here it is. Sorry, Aziz.
Enjoy.
I'm sorry. All right, Burlew, I know you're a big Hollywood fan, big fan of Hollywood, and you love Hollywood. You watch the Golden Globes.
Oh, yeah.
You know, you have those big Golden Globes parties and Grammys.
Totally.
Parties.
I mean, I get all the crudité out. I call all Oscars my girls parties. Over. And we just, you know, shriek every time we see somebody dreamy up there.
Yeah, you have like you know, you guys bet on who's wearing what on the red carpet. I bet it's Versace. I bet it's Gucci.
I won a lot of money putting it on black.
You wouldn't have won black a couple years at the Oscars, years ago at the Oscars.
Yeah.
No blacks.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
No blacks won, right? But so first off, what is the Golden? What's the difference between the Golden Globe and the Oscars?
I think it's like a that's the international film equivalent, and they equate also television and film together.
Oh,
and then they had the People's Choice, and then of course the Oscars, Emmys, Grammys, Tonys.
It's just nice to watch rich people give each other awards. You know,
well, I even heard about it. I mean, literally, movies campaign like they'll bring in the judges for like swanky parties and give them gifts and stuff like that, just so they can get an award.
I know it's. I can't watch that stuff. Like my brain just tunes out to that. I mean, it has no interest. But you know, one of the big themes, obviously, in Hollywood was going with this sexual harassment that's running rampant in Hollywood and the Me Too, if you will, with the likes of Weinstein and Louis C.K. And I don't really need to explain every person because if you don't know what I'm talking about, I don't know what you do in your everyday life, but. We thought it would be funny or interesting to kind of predict. It seems like anybody is thrown into some kind of scandal or is accused in the last couple. Now, maybe it seems like it's passing a little bit, so maybe we won't.
I think after the range of firing, people are again kind of like, oh, better watch out.
Yeah. So we might see. The rules of this, I think, are going to be. Obviously, nothing has to be proven. Just an accusation will get you points on the board.
Yeah, we're not rooting for women to get harassed or sexually assaulted in any way.
Aisha Ash, you hear that? We're not rooting.
Don't call us.
But we thought it'd be funny to make a list of kind of what guys are going to get accused over this next year. Who's going to pop up? So we made a list of 25. We made a list of 20, and then five, I call them like Mr. Nice Guys, like super people you would never assume.
See, I didn't make out a nice guys.
Well, that's right.
I'll just did my 20.
I'll leave my nice guys at the end then.
All right. That's fine.
All right. So I want to just kind of go back and forth. And we'll kind of keep you updated if anything does happen.
Yeah.
So I'll go first. Number one on my list is the one and only Alex Rodriguez for me. The old A-Rod. Yeah. He's dumb. He's good looking. He's
cocky.
Got women all the time. He's cocky. He's had a weird checkered past. Like, you know, a lot of scandal around him already. I'm going with A-Rod as my first pick.
And we're doing these in no particular order. We're not saying the last guy is most likely to meet you.
I didn't rank them.
No, I didn't do
some
it either.
Disgusting people.
Yeah, I got some weird stuff here. I'm going to start off with my number one, Dr. Phil.
Dr. Phil.
He just got the look.
He does. I like that one.
He is intimidating. He pushes people around. That's what a lot of people, they kind of get in their head. I can get away with stuff. And he just seems like the one.
I can see it, man. Just kind of grabs. Solid pick. Solid draft pick. All right. I'm not going to go in order either. I'm just going to kind of pick one at a time here. I'm going to go with Mickey Rourke.
Interesting.
Mickey Rourke. Lots of drugs and plastic surgeries through years, and you're telling me there's not a book of crap on him somewhere. And he's still kind of creepy, so I'm going with Mickey Rourke.
All right, I just made the list. So number two, I'm going to say from the WWE, Shawn Michaels. He's retired. He's kind of religious, but I still hear stories. He's kind of an a-hole. It's one of those you think he's a nice guy, so he can kind of sneak some things in there. Just something I could totally go, you were due, Sean. You were due.
All right. In the same vein, I'm going from the WWE, Vince McMahon.
Yeah, I was thinking that.
I bet you there's someone we have on here. That's
I wouldn't be surprised.
Vince McMahon is a total creep. I mean, he just look at that guy.
He's got to get his new XFL cheerleader, so he's going to be playing around.
Just the power hungry and the money. Someone's going to accuse that guy of something.
Easily, yeah. I wouldn't be surprised. My number three is a buddy of yours. He's a local person.
Like
New
a friend?
Jersey person. Chris Christie.
Oh, yes.
Big, fat, bully, thinks he knows everything, addicted to food all the time. I can surely see he's addicted to something else.
That's what I love. He's on those addiction commercials.
Yeah.
That's what I wrote the other night. I made a post. I'm like, it's anybody, really ironic that he's doing addiction commercials.
Yeah, anybody who feels they're good enough to say, I will help stop you bad people, probably snuck something in
their life. That pick. It's a solid pick. I didn't take a lot of time on mine. Like, I kind of did a stream of thought. I'm going to upset some people here. I'm gonna go with a shock pick here, if you will, Burlow.
Okay, let's hear it.
I'm going to go with, from Star Wars, Luke Skywalker himself, Mark Hamill.
Interesting.
Yeah, I get a weird vibe from him in interviews and kind of creeps me out a little bit. Like,
I kind of see it. Like, he goes to those cosplay things and the Star Wars things. You can totally see he could probably try to grab one of those girls.
He's kind of weird and dismissive in interviews and kind of aloof. I think Luke, he might have, I don't know, we'll say something with his lightsaber.
Okay. Number four, Matthew Perry from Friends.
I was thinking Friends, too. I must went with Chandler.
It's just one of those, none of them really have had success other than Jennifer Aniston, but they still sit back around and go, yeah, we're cool. Even though, like, a 14-year-old would be like, what's Friends right now? I could just totally see, and he was the cocky one, him just kind of go, I could get away with this. I'm Matthew Perry, when the girl's just like, yeah, some stranger just grabbed my boob.
I can see it, man. I'm going to go on with another big one. Around film for years, a monster in the industry, the one and only Steven Spielberg. I just worked with too many actresses along the way. One of them is just going to be like, hey, did you? Not to say, again, prefacing all of this, not to say any of these guys are guilty.
No.
But I just think of his body of work and the amount of people he's worked with.
Yeah.
One of these actresses is going to be like, oh, I didn't get that part.
Yeah, he was kind of like, oh, you want to be in the next Indiana Jones, huh?
Exactly.
Let me whip it out.
Oh, you want a scene with a raptor. Like, it's not happening. Unless.
Yeah.
No. And then, so I'm going with Steven Spielberg. All right.
My next one, James Harrison from the Pittsburgh Steelers, New England Patriots.
I can see it. Another solid pick, Mike.
He's a very angry, upset kind of person. He's on the tail end of his career, so it's going to be
get
like
a Super Bowl on the way out.
Yeah, he might get a ring. Just one of those, you know, this is my last hurrah. I can see him like just being like, I can do this. I'm James Harrison. I mean, he spends like, I think he spends like $750,000 every year on his body so he can keep on going. So I can totally see him say, yeah, you want to touch this.
I like the pick. I got a couple athletes on mine. So I'm going to stick in that. I'm going to go with former Nick Carmelo Anthony. Never liked the guy. He always gave me a bad vibe. Never really loved him as a player. I know a lot of Knick fans probably. I'm not a Knick fan. But I always something off about him. I think he just seemed like a seedy kind of guy, and seedy kind of guys do seedy kind of things. Carmelo Anthony's on my board.
Okay. My next one from Rescue Me, Dennis Leary.
Oh, no.
Comedian. Yeah. I love him too. Yep. But he just gives the vibe where I can totally see it as a why? I just took down my pants. Why? Kind of deals, you know? Maybe in the same realm as Louis C.K., where it's just like, it's a joke, you know?
I can see it, man. I can see it. I will go with another athlete, the Rocket himself, Roger Clemens.
Yeah, I
just see him as a total.
I'm almost shocked it hasn't happened now that you said
that. I can see him
loud.
As a total just jerk, talking to women like trash. Roger definitely seems like that to me.
Okay. My next one, Seth Rogen.
Wow.
He's done.
Shock pick.
Yeah, I mean, he's
seems like everyone's buddy, kind of hot.
Yeah. It's funny because, you know, I tried that.
So you think he just like
tried to slip one in, kind of like the Al Franken kind of thing.
Right.
It's like, oh, we'll do a bit here, you know.
Well, I went with a couple nice guys. I'm going to do my five nice guys at the end.
Okay.
All right. I went with a random pick here because I think you got to throw a random one on there just in case. I went with Seal.
Interesting.
I don't
know. The funny thing is, like if you just randomly came up to me, you'd say, Mike, do you think Seal touched a woman inappropriately? And I'd give you a look. What the hell are you talking about? We're doing this game. I'm like,
I know. And you're kind of like, I can see it.
Yeah.
Used to be
Kiss the Rose.
On the grave. Stop saying that.
I will.
You remain my power, my pleasure, my pain.
All right. All right. Our next one I'm going to pick, I put down Al Sharpton.
Oh, yeah. He's got a creep.
I mean, total power trip. He, you know, you can't correct him in any way. It's whatever happened was the worst thing that ever happened in the world. I can totally see him just be like, yeah, to this music.
I feel like we needed some background music, and Seal provided it.
So, yeah, I could just imagine something occurring and he just tried to do something like a young teenager trying to help out a movement or something.
I can't disagree with any of your picks so far.
Thank you.
Can't disagree. Mm. I'm going to go with an obvious one that I think hasn't come out, which I'm amazed, maybe because he has so much money and he's got Hush, but Howard Stern.
I was thinking about putting him on there. I was wondering if you'd be like, too obvious.
Well, he was my obvious one. I tried to do some...
Yeah.
Obvious, some weird ones, and then some nice people that I think would
like, be. I was debating him and Anthony Cumia, both of them, but I didn't put either of them on the list.
Howard, I don't think I even got to explain it too much. Like,
yeah.
He's been a creep to women for years until he tried this new, like, I'm queen, I'm the judge of America's Got Talent, or whatever.
Yeah, he wanted to get some serious interviews and kind of resurrect his radio
image,
career.
You know, change his image before he's done. So I got Howard Stern.
All right, my next one. Macklemore.
That seems like a random one. I like it.
It seems random. I mean, he's still kind of big, but he's kind of down a little bit. I could just see him trying to make a move at a concert and some girl in the... Changing the...
I'll wear my grandma's clothes. You take them off me hose.
Yeah.
I got it. All right. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that was your most random one so far, Macklemore.
I think you'll enjoy the next one after that. But.
All right. I went with comic Jeff Dunham. The guy with all the puppets. Because if you have puppets, you're just a weird guy in general. Yeah. And who knows what he's making the... It wasn't me. It was,
it was him. Stop it, Bippy. Yeah. Stop it.
Exactly. So I'm thinking like, knock it off. So, and Jeff Dunham's all squeaky and nice. Mm-hmm. And I don't know. You have that many puppets and voices and you do puppets every day. Something weird's going
to
happen.
Yeah, eventually. It has to happen. All right. You were saying my last one was kind of random. We're going to go to a next level of random. My next one... is Papa John's founder, John H. Schnatter.
Because I can see it because everything's crumbling around them as it is. So maybe...
He's losing stuff. I mean, he's always complaining about stuff. He's always doing shady stuff, talking about, I can't pay my people 15 cents more an hour or give insurance or in the NFL so with their kneelers.
Death blow.
I just see him in a bad mood and, I'm a pizza king and just like... randomly grab a girl, for lack of a better term.
I could see it. I like it. I'm going to do two because they go together.
All right,
so I'm going to spit out two. I don't know how you survive for 60 years of rocking and just being drunks and monsters with Mick Jagger and Keith Richards.
Makes sense.
I mean, yeah. Here's the thing. I bet you most of the women wanted to be with them, but there's going to be someone. That's me like, Mick Jagger did that to me in 1957 when they were on their last farewell tour. But I'm going to throw the two of them out there as a team.
Okay.
Because Mick Jagger, come on.
All right. I mean,
Mick Jagger's got kids that are like, he's having kids now. He's like,
they're like grandparents right now.
Yeah.
All right, should I just throw out two?
Throw two.
All right. My next two, Adam Savage from Mythbusters and Rex Ryan.
I like the Rex Ryan pick. It's a solid pick.
Mm-hmm. It's on ESPN, which has had about 5-6 people fired because of sexual harassment.
Let me see your toes.
Exactly. when you got those specific...
He kept asking me to see his toes.
When you got that specific fetish, you know something's going to happen. And all, like, one of the... Sports Center girls takes off her shoes and all. He's just salivating over them, and on some incident happens.
And why Adam Savage?
I think he's a nice guy, but I think he's just got a look where you'd be like, yeah. Just the look alone. I mean, I think everything I heard, he's like the coolest guy on Earth, but there's a lot of people on the Me Too list who we thought were the coolest people on Earth. So for that, Adam Savage is on my list.
All right. All right. I'm going to go with 50 Cent.
Solid. I like it.
Don't love him. Like, as a person, he's got some good, he's a decent actor and had a good rap album or two, but something rubs me the wrong way about him. He's rich. He's powerful.
He's kind of poor, I heard, actually, right now. His career's been on the...
He should be rich and powerful. I'm going 50 Cent.
Okay. My next one, Patton Oswalt.
Wow. You know, I thought about him, too, but
chubby comedian. Oh, I mean, he's famous, but he's not really famous because...
He's been through such because hell he's one known, last year.
I mean, you look at his face and you go, oh, I know that guy, but...
Okay. I hope not, because that guy's had a rough couple years, man.
Nah, I'm not wishing something on these people. It's just like random looking at some people, some characteristics that we see in these people who touch women.
I can see it. Hey.
Can see it.
Hey.
Yeah.
I went a little different on this one. I went Into the Grave.
Oh.
He's no longer with us.
I was thinking about doing a pick like that.
Well, because, hey, that's these accusations can come out whenever. Yeah. And I'm going with old Mickey Blue Eyes himself, Frank Sinatra.
I'm surprised we didn't get one at the end.
You're not going to tell me that.
Woody Allen like, just throws out some stories about him.
Sinatra was like a womanizer. And, he was around those Vegas clubs all the time. You tell me there's a 70-year-old woman like,
He totally.
Really creepy.
Yeah.
Like, the world's on a string. Please play with my thing. Oh, tonight. So I'm going.
All right.
Frankie.
All right. I got somebody who just recently got out of jail. I'm going with OJ.
All right. OJ goes back into the spotlight.
He still has all his money. Yep. He's been cooped up in prison for like 14 years. Yep. He can't stay away from the blondes with big boobs that love him to death. And let's be frank. Yeah.
Literally.
And let's be frank. These women aren't the highest class of women on the planet, so they could be going in there just for a quick grab and go, me too, me too, me too.
Take the last of his money that he's holding. Exactly. All right. I went with Joel Osteen. Joel Osteen or Osteen.
Yeah.
I look at his face. I get a total creep vibe. I just, all those people on his charts, like, come back with me. Like, I'll heal you. But you got to come back to the private Texas. Your turn, Mike.
All right. Quite a few news people got released because of the Me Too movement. So they put Anderson Cooper.
Anderson.
Now, granted, his Me Too would be in the same sex.
Yep, that's fine.
Nothing wrong with that, but, I mean, it seems to be the ones that had it. It's not, like, outside of one from Fox News. Most of them are, like, the pristine, you think nothing of it, oh, he's a nice guy, what would he ever do? But,
hey,
Kevin
Spacey.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. All right, I'm going to go... into the rock world.
Oh.
James Hetfield.
Could see it.
Yeah.
he'd be doing it while thrashing.
Ooh, yeah.
Grab, grab. Grab, grab.
I'm going with James Hetfield. Never liked that guy either.
Although,
he was on Rogan, and he sounded like a pretty interesting guy, but... doesn't mean he hasn't had a few. He was a big drinker back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
Like, all those tours. I could see a Me Too coming out on James Hetfield.
All right. My next one, I'm going to go with Guy Fieri.
I was almost going to go Bobby Flay. I was thinking of, like, other food guys.
I look at the hairdo, I'm in my 40s, but I think I'm in my 20s. I mean, he's a very likable guy that everybody loves, so I can kind of see him just, you know, grabbing the muffins, for lack of a better term.
All right. I'm going to go with Siegfried.
Oh. I was thinking of both of them.
I was going with Siegfried. A lot of years in Vegas. A lot of years with some money. He might have really found a man that didn't want any part of him and just went for it. Mm. Siegfried.
All right. My next one is going to be a really interesting one, and it's the youngest person on my list. I'm going with LaMelo Ball, the youngest son of LaVar Ball.
Wow.
The kid is 15 or 16.
Okay.
he's over there in a circus in Lithuania. His dad just pretty much doesn't care what those kids do. The one steals in China, almost gets 20 years down there, and he just says, shut up. We dealt with it. I can totally, and also in a recent interview, he talked about, like, yeah, I don't need education. I'm trying to be athletic.
All right. I like it. It's an out there pick. I love it.
I can totally see some European girl just getting a little too close, and he just figures, I'm a baller.
All right. I'm going to go with Vin Diesel. Vin Diesel. Hmm. Doesn't seem like the most educated man in the world. Kind of clunky. He was like a heartthrob there for a little while, like very
what
short
did we
period.
Play before Hand Sharks.
Hand Sharks. Yeah. Just bring that back one day. Street Shark. No, Hand Sharks.
Hand Sharks.
Yeah, something like that.
There were sharks on your hand. God knows why it didn't work.
But I'm going Vin Diesel. Guy always rubbed me the wrong way. Doesn't seem all there to me.
All right. Kind of a person, same kind of category, rubs you wrong. You kind of question him, and he's just starting to get back into the business. Mel Gibson.
Oh, so you think he comes back and someone just delivers the knockout blow? Mm-hmm. Like, all right, you're done.
Yeah. He's a guy who always gets in trouble, won't shut up, and I could just totally see him just doing something.
All right, this guy, I think he's a total creep. Just comes out creepy. One of the greatest baseball players of all time, but Pete Rose.
Yeah.
He seems like a bag of crap, man. Yeah. Like, he seems like a big pile of disgusting man.
Mm.
Yeah. He just seems like gambling and hitting on chicks and drinking. You know, like, that's Pete Rose to me.
All right. My next one is former Superman Dean Cain. Still kind of got his looks. Not as famous as he used to be, but probably thinks he's kind of famous in some way.
Dean Cain.
Just lends itself for the out-of-nowhere Me Too, if you will.
All right. I'm going with former guest Lenny Dykstra.
I came that close. That close.
Go listen to the episode and tell me. If you don't agree with me, tweet at us. Go listen to
tweet us the Me Too.
Just Lenny Dykstra is a special human being. Mm-hmm. My favorite baseball player of all time, but he's an interesting man.
Interesting man, yeah. My next one on my list is Kevin Smith.
Kevin
just
Smith.
Gives the vibe. He hasn't done anything, but he gives a vibe. You know, always
he's
wearing the sweatshirts, kind of heavy
jerseys.
Set, the beard, just everything about him kind of goes, I know you did Clerks, and I like that, but still, I won't be surprised if I hear stories about Mallrats.
All right, so these are my five people that would blow the world apart, I think,
all right.
If they came out, all right? I'm going with.
Okay.
Everyone's favorite loved one, Stevie Wonder. Stevie has survived for a long time in the public eye. Everyone loves him.
Mm-hmm.
He's blind. He's soulful. Like, you don't know what, you know, he might play that up a little bit. Like,
yeah.
I'm so curious. And.
You know? I didn't know what I was touching.
Yeah, oops. A little handsy Stevie doesn't mm-hmm. surprise me at all.
Yeah.
So I'm going with Stevie Wonder.
All right. Now, the reason why I didn't go with Lenny Dykstra was I went with one of his teammates.
Daryl Strawberry.
There you go.
I was going to put him on the list.
Having sex in between innings. Just his whole history.
The writing's on the wall.
I totally just see somebody coming out and saying, yeah, I got a soul pole, baby.
Yeah. All right, I'm going everyone's loved one, the biracial angel, Derek Jeter. The soul-crushing punch to all of New York and Major League Baseball.
And nobody would care in Miami.
No. A Me Too punch heard across the world. Mm. Derek Jeter.
Yeah, like on New Year's Eve as they're counting down and Mariah's singing for the third time. It's like, oh, by the way.
Me Too!
Damn it! Scott took the lead. I have no time.
I think that guy skated for too long with no sore spot.
Nobody talked about him. Like, there was unwritten rule. You couldn't say anything about
him. I think that's why. Mm. There's dirt out there, man, if you dig. All right.
All right. My next one, he's kind of been hurt as a slimy guy. He's not been around lately, but I can totally see it. Jay Leno. He's been doing a lot of backstabbing, a lot of I get what I want.
Been around for a long time. Had a lot of power to get people on the show.
Yeah, I got the pristine cars where it's like, hey, sit in my car.
I like it. I'm going with another loved one. Everyone loves him around the Olympics coming up. Bob Costas. Bob Costas. He seems to skate free of no criticism and comes out with pink eye that one time. And I don't think Bobby might be a little handsy in the off season.
Interesting. The next one, everybody knows he's kind of scummy, and I think he's just a matter of time. Dustin Diamond from Saved by the Bell.
Yeah. I mean, that would surprise no one.
Yes, no. The sex tapes, just the bitterness of the show, all that fun stuff. It totally could see the guy.
All that fun stuff.
Yeah. All right. It's all right.
All right. I'm going with another wholesome man. All the chicks love him. He's so hot. He's got a beautiful voice. I'm going Adam Levine of Maroon 5. That precious, precious man, piece of man meat.
Yeah, that would shock some people.
I think women would be devastated. They love that guy. And he's like on The Voice, like, ha, 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 Team Adam. I can see it just going down the tube. And again, this is just accusation. Someone throws it out there, it makes a news story, you get points for it.
Exactly. My next one, considering where he got famous run, it would not be a surprise whatsoever. I'm going with Mike Sorrentino, a.k.a. The Situation.
All right. Yep. I completely agree with that. Yeah. Are we done? I think this is the last one, right?
I got one more.
You got one more, right? And I got one more.
Yeah.
Right. All right. The one that's going to devastate America and just put people in terrible place. Not Trump. We already know that's... That's easy picking.
Yeah, I was thinking about it. I'm like, they're already out there.
There's some guys that are just too easy. Like, yeah. You know, but this is not too easy. This is outside the box thinking. I'm going with Ellen
DeGeneres.
Ellen DeGeneres. Everyone's favorite wholesome lesbian. She's a woman, powerful woman. Like
game shows, talk shows.
Everyone loves her. Great. She's coming out with a stand-up special again soon. Imagine if that happened.
Mm.
Like, some woman before Portia came out and was just like, you know, Ellen was a creep, you know. Yeah. Back in the stand-up comedy days, the clubs. And
it would destroy liberals. Oh, them alone.
Devastating. Ooh. If Ellen, Derek Jeter, and Stevie Wonder came out, it just
all in the same show. You were molested. And you got molested.
So that's my bombshell pick is right. Ellen and Jeter.
Yeah, mine's just my 25th pick. Mm-hmm. But it kind of goes back to same premise of questionable comedians who would be around. Jeff Foxworthy.
I was thinking in that realm. I was going Larry the Cable Guy, but he's actually pretty like just like a wholesome dude. It seems it's all
a lot of these people are wholesome people. Yeah. But it's just like you look at him like, could be.
We've also just eliminated folks 50 people from the show. That 49, so not just dead.
Are you saying we're not going to get Papa John's as a sponsor?
Hey, the prices are coming down. He might be scratching. All right, so that is, there's 50 people. I don't know how we want to score this, Mike. Maybe we'll talk about it. Like, everyone you get is 5 points. What would be interesting to me is if you ranked them 1 through 25, You listen over there?
I'm sorry. I got an email back from Argus.
Oh, okay. Yeah. If we ranked them 1 through 25, and if that person, if your 25 hits, you get 25 points.
Mm.
If your 1 hits, it'd probably be your least likely. But it could also be a little bit of strategy, because if your big fish hits, you get 25 points unexpected. So maybe we'll do that. We'll talk about it. But we're going to put these up. We'll put these up on the website and see what you guys think. Not the website, our Instagram and stuff like that. We'll put Mike's picks, my picks, and see if you guys agree and what you think.
We'll
and
tag all of our guests.
Yeah. So we'll see. So hopefully none of these. Okay, I'm secretly hoping for maybe Jeff Dunham. That would be funny.
Yeah, even if it's like me too, and they turn around and say, oh, it wasn't proven. Yeah,
again, it's just a headline. Yeah. So it's got to be a headline. And it can't be your own news website. I already see you thinking like.
Scott, I got touched by O.J. Simpson.
the Burlew Exquisitor News.
Breaking news. The Burl's on site.
Dude, I see you in the back. Background, like I see the picture of you. Doesn't count. So yeah. So when Vince McMahon gets accused, that'll be points, stuff like that. So that is the Me Too pool this year, and we'll see what happens. Maybe the Me Too thing dies down, but I could definitely see. I bet you, we see 5 out of our 2 lists go down in flames.
Yeah.
So that is the Me Too pool or competition or something. Something like that. All right, so another eventful podcast, buddy.
Absolutely, man.
We are off to a rocking start in 2018. Again, before we get out of here, just the last 2 weeks was Gift of Gab, who is just a very well-known, talented rapper from Black Delicious. And then last week was Mike Stern from Pixar and Sean Sweeney from the Jane Goodall Foundation. And then, obviously, today's episode. So we are... we are off to a,
and we're booked to close halfway through February.
Yep. With a couple on the horizon that I'm very excited about too. Mm-hmm. That haven't been exactly confirmed yet, but we're there.
Yeah,
we got the.
We don't talk about the close twos.
Yeah,
after we talk to them, then we'll actually tell you.
Yeah, the irons in the fire, as we like to say. Yeah, I don't like to say, we got this guy coming on, because then I feel like I'm jinxing it almost.
But. It's almost a guarantee if we brag about it, it's going to fall right to the floor.
Right. So before we get out of here, Burlo, anything to promote, share,
put
people in touch with?
I will promote our friends Joe Fernandez and Mike Gaffney.
Oh, I don't like them.
Oh, all right. It's just me, I guess, if they remember me. Ugh, the All in Our Heads podcast. You can go on facebook.com/
podcast is terrible.
All in Our Heads podcast. They a lot of times record the episodes live on Facebook, but or if you can't get to it, you can see them or listen to them on iTunes, iHeartRadio, or the Laughable app.
Yep. Same thing with us, by the way. We just got put on another service, Podable. So again, you're not stupid. Go Google Verbal Shenanigans, but yeah. Whatever you
listen to this episode to figure out how to listen to this episode.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. But you don't have to listen to it off the site though, which I think is what some people do. But download the apps on your phone: iTunes, Stitcher, Laughable, Google Play. We're on pretty much every single one I think that we can be on. I just tried to get us on Spotify today, so hopefully that will be coming up. We just recently got added to Podable. But I want to promote. I'm going to be this Thursday, so tomorrow when this comes out, I'm going to be at the opening night. My buddy Gerard Heron is opening a show in Jersey City at JC Underground. I'm on the opening night, and it's a killer lineup. Gerald Benford, Jeffrey Gurian, Gerard, Mike Ciccoli, myself. So it's going to be awesome. And actually, the tickets are $20, but if you enter the promo code Scott, SCOT, that's what I can buy on Facebook, you get 20% off.
So, look at you.
So that should be a fun show.
Awesome.
But I will be, before we go, a little bummed out. We had another passing, man. Another Dolores O'Riordan from the Cranberries died today.
That was a very underrated group.
Someone I was trying to get on the show. The guy from Ray B, they represented her for a while, and they they were giving me some emails and stuff like that. Said she's very hard to get, and then she's gonna be a little harder now.
Yeah,
but I love the Cranberries. I went through a big Cranberries phase for a while. So it's kind of a bummer. 45 or 46
Yeah, that's way too young.
Definitely got drugs written all over it.
Yeah. Well, you kind of hope something unexpected happened. I mean, there's nothing pleasant from passing away. You almost hope, okay, it's something they didn't see. It's where you, nothing you can do. Yeah. But.
So kind of a bummer, another band that I listened to as a kid.
Well, in 2019, you might be able to bring her back.
So. Yeah. Well, life is funny, people. Laugh at it. Keep the wind at your back. And keep subscribing, sharing, loving, liking, commenting, doing all sorts of things.
Talk to us, please. Yeah. Give us ideas.
Adios, guys.
Later.